Welcome to Patent Pod Chat with noted inventor and patent attorney Chris Majorana. Each week, Chris answers your questions on patents, trademarks, and inventions. Now, here's Chris Majorana.
Chris, we discussed responding to an office action in a previous interview, and when we discussed the claim of the art references, you mentioned there was a different standard for patentability than for potential infringement issues. Could you explain that a little more?
Sure. So when you're working with the patent office to try to get your claim allowed and ultimately issued as a patent, you're concerned that your claim has at least one element that is not shown in the references. And we talked a little bit how the references can use either what's in the specification, drawings, or the claims of the references. So that's a concern when we're trying to get your patent to issue. But when you turn around and try to enforce your patent, then you're looking more at showing that a competitor's product has each of the elements that are in your claim. So that's why we ultimately try to have fewer words in the claim, but still meet the standard of patentability.
So if there's an infringement concern, what should a client do?
Yeah, this comes up sometimes where a client will see an art reference that's cited in their patent application against them for patentability reasons, and they look at the claims and say, oh, should I be concerned about infringement? These are tough judgment calls to make. The bottom line rule is if there's any concern at all, they should give us a call and we can discuss whether we should move on with some of the different options that are available. If they don't raise the issue with us, then there's not much we can do to help. But if they raise the issue, then we can discuss it and talk about the options.
And what are some of those options?
The first option that we suggest a lot of times is to get a legal opinion. So there's different kinds of opinions. There's one that would be a non-infringement opinion, and that's when you look at a competitor's claim and decide whether your product infringes that claim. So if we look at the standards that we talked about above, does your product have each of the elements of the claim that the competitor's patent has? So what we try to do is look for some odd-sounding clause or some clause that seems fairly restrictive. The reason we look for that is because that's likely what your competitor had to argue in front of the patent office to get their patent allowed. That's a key. So if we don't have this clause that was key to their patentability, then we don't infringe, and the client's in a lot better shape.
Can a client's patents help if they are infringing other claims?
To some extent, yes. In the big picture, patents are swords. They're not shields. So they're an offensive weapon. What can happen is if a competitor, especially if this is a smaller business or a business that you know your competitor well, if they decide to enforce one of their patents against you and you have nothing in that field to fight back with, then you're kind of stuck with only defending against their patent. If you have another patent in the field that you can use offensively against them, it can be a big strategic advantage. So you could say, hey, if you don't drop your lawsuit, we're going to file a cross-claim against you or counterclaim, and then we're going to really have to duke this out. I've seen that happen where one client back in the day was not happy that they only had 100 patents issued, and they were in a dispute with another competitor that had 1,000 patents issued. So the idea from the CEO was that when he sat down to the table to negotiate, this other company said, if we do a straight cross license, you're getting a 10-to-1 advantage over us because we're going to have 1,000 patents that you get rights to where we only get 100. So because of that imbalance, there was a significant cash transaction that went in the one direction. So if you have more patents to fight with, you can minimize what the cash balancing amount is if you're into a cross-license situation.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now, can you write a non-infringement opinion?
Sure. We do a fair number of those, and each case has its own little nuances. Ideally, if you're getting a threatening letter from someone where they say, hey, we're going to sue you if you don't, basically, if you don't pay up, right? You pay this license or we're going to sue you. But we're going to do a patentability, or rather a non-infringement opinion, and look at it and decide, do we really have something to worry about? Are they puffing their chest to try to, scare us into a license, or do they have a point? So if they have a point, then we might even not finish the opinion and kind of have an interview on the phone that says, look, you better kind of negotiate something with these guys because you don't have a lot to go on. More often than not, we do find some clause in the claim that, isn't infringed, and we can finish the opinion on that. So we did have a client in that situation that was faced with defending a litigation, and a few different firms gave him pretty big quotes for defending these things, like $1 million was one of them. We did an opinion that was more in line with, doing a few patent applications worth of work, that kind of budget. And they ultimately use that to get out of the litigation. So that client regularly tells me that, we saved them $1 million.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Do opinions relate to adversarial proceedings?
Not directly, but we have had other interviews where we talked about interferences, about inter-party reviews and derivations. Each of those proceedings has a very strong detailed claim analysis portion of it where it's more than just looking at it for an hour and saying, there's no way you infringe this patent. I mean, we study that, put a lot of time in to make sure that any reasonable interpretations of the claims would be covered. Because we don't want to just kind of hide our head in the sand and say, we don't infringe your claim when, all right, if the court looks at this clause as being a broad case, then are we really safe to say there's no way we infringe it? So we want to kind of define the different scopes of these things, really get into the claims, and all those different adversarial proceedings have those common components.
Okay, now you've got a large body of work, a lot of patents. Does that help on opinions and adversarial proceedings?
Sure. So the procurement portion of it that we deal with the patent office helps us really understand how to compare those claims to the art that's available. And we're dealing with the patent office on that. So we take that same knowledge and turn it around and do more detailed analysis when we get into the adversarial situations. So at this point, we have 1,600 issued patents, more than that, and we're getting close to being able to update on the website to say, all right, we have 1,700 issued patents. So we've done so many of these for so long that it's second nature, so that when we get into the adversarial work, we can spend a little more time and have very good results with clients. We, to date, have not lost an adversarial proceeding, which is something that we're very proud of.
Thank you for listening to Patent Podchat with noted inventor and patent attorney Chris Majorana. Join us next time as Chris answers your questions on patents, trademarks, and inventions.